10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Watchman's Cry, News from the Wall, your source for the truth and what's really happening today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be part two of Donald Trump, the Future of America, already in progress. Now, before Donald Trump became a candidate, if we were to go back 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, let's go back to 2012. Mm-hmm. And if we heard that when Obama's done, the new candidate is going to sell us on databases and surveillance, how many people, how many Republicans would say, wow, that's a good idea. I can't wait till Obama's done so that in 4 years we can do that. How many would go for that?
None. Isn't that what the whole Snowden thing showed us, is that people were up in arms and angry that we had been lied to and spied on?
Yes. And then when we saw that facility in Utah, and now we all know our cell phone calls are listened to, or the landlines are listened. We know it. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, make note of what's going on here. We have Donald Trump, the front runner for the Republican ticket, openly saying on interviews that we need databases and surveillance. Now, how does he get away with this? What does he use to sell it? Well, it's the old classical equation called the Hegelian dialectic. Those of you that have been awake long enough, you know what it's all about, where you have a problem that is presented to the population or a threat, but you have problem and then you have a reaction and then a solution. So what is the problem that we are facing right now in America and in the West that's going on? What is it, Donna?
It's terrorism, of course. It's always terrorism.
It was terrorism after 9/11.
And that's what Bush Jr. used to give us all the spying.
The Patriot Act had a sunset clause, and then they did Patriot Act 2, and then that went by the wayside, and now we have another version of it. But it didn't have as many teeth as the original Patriot Act. So if Trump is telling us we need those things, don't we have those now? So what is he talking about? We have that already in Utah, that facility. Donna. And then the donut in the UK that's comparable to it, we've talked about that in the past.
But they want the people on board. So they're using the ISIS and the Syrian refugee crisis in order to get the people on board to say, hey, yeah, please spy on us.
Okay, so now I have to ask this question. Ladies and gentlemen, think about this, please. Because the way that people are thinking at the moment is they're just looking at the problem as if the problem happened on its own. And now we have this savior, Donald Trump, who has been deified in the eyes of their Trumpeteers. They're almost worshiping him. And he is going to be the savior to come in and turn things around. And one of the reasons is because of this problem of ISIS and illegal immigration, the invasion of the Muslims, and the threat of terrorism. But let's take a step back and go backwards in the calendar before this invasion started. Because what caused it in the first place? The Syrian crisis. And that's been going on for years now. He has been trying to take us into Syria, Obama has, because what's his buddy, the grand chessboard guy? Brzezinski.
Oh, Brzezinski. Zbigniew.
Zbigniew Brzezinski wants that war in the Middle East. So if we go backwards, I can imagine. Now, folks, I'm not saying this did happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. Let's visit this for a moment. Is it possible that a meeting took place and they sat around and they said, you know, the public is not sold on Syria, so that's one problem. And they are not sold on surveillance and spying. That's another problem. So how do we get the public to want us to go into Syria with our boots, with our boys? Okay, they're sitting around smoking their cigars in the dark dungeon room after they sacrificed, you know, did their little seance and summoning and whatever they do, those vampires.
Drink blood.
Yeah, who knows, right? So they have their meeting and they discuss, how do we sell the public on wanting us to invade Syria? Not allowing it, but wanting it. What do? Well, we need to create a monster. We need to create an enemy that lurks in Syria, who dwells in the caves of Syria, who uses Syria as their hiding, their hideout, their lair, their whatever it is, but they're from Syria.
That is so vile that and do things that are so horrible that they will want them taken care of, the people.
And voila, Donna.
Here's ISIS.
ISIS was the creation. It was the afterbirth of Al-Qaeda. And it's supposedly the rogues from Al-Qaeda, and it's the misfits from Al-Qaeda, the sweat hogs of Al-Qaeda, the rebels who didn't want to follow in the regular fundamental ways of Al-Qaeda. And so they are Al-Qaeda on human growth hormone / steroids / drinking blood. These are demonic evil creatures, ISIS. And we know that now because we've seen what they do. But if we were to examine from the creation of ISIS when they first appeared, there are a lot of unanswered questions. ISIS, in the first place, Jihadi John, wears Nikes, has a British accent, and the ISIS videos, it has come forth that some of those have questionable roots. They look like they were created in some studio somewhere in front of a green screen, and they never really show the beheadings. They show the before and the after, and is it Hollywood mock-ups? Is it fake? Are they real heads? I don't know. So if that was phase one, let's create this monster, make videos, make the public mad, and kill the innocent, and then show that they dwell in Syria, and then have their raids where they leave the Syrian border and cross the border, go into Iraq, and then start causing problems in other places of the world, their headquarters in Syria, then the world will want the American military to go in there and take care of them. What a brilliant idea. A hand is raised in the back of the room. So how do we do this? What do we call them? And so they figured it all out. It appears that that's what happened, because if we go back and look at the evolution of ISIS, they came out of the blue and they made everybody mad and the public wants them to be dealt with. On top of that, we have them now threatening to come into the United States. They are going into Europe. They did the one attack in California, San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. They did the attacks in Paris, and there's been other places, and we now have the threat of ISIS. So enter the candidate, Donald Trump, who says, ladies and gentlemen, ISIS is in Syria. We got to go in and take care of them and destroy them. And also ISIS is here. They're the Trojan horse. And we also have to make sure we're watching all the methods that ISIS has. Well, number one, they're Muslims, meaning we need to spy on the mosques, which on paper sounds good, doesn't it, Donna?
It does. It sounds good on paper.
Ladies and gentlemen, right? It sounds great. Yeah, spy on them, those muzzies.
Except.
The Daesh. Spy on them. Except. But see, people don't think about the except.
No.
To have a policy of surveillance and spying, people do not think of the stopgap measures and the limits and the policy and the rules of engagement. They don't think about that. All they think about is safety. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a crafty plan designed by Satan that's immersed in American politics, world politics, Western politics, NATO politics, that have created this boogeyman. So in addition to it bringing in surveillance and databases, spying, it has actually recruited the average American to want it, Donna, and to take part in it, so that the average Joe will spy on their neighbors, just as Donald Trump said. So Trump is using this excuse to justify spying. Now, I want to play something for you, ladies and gentlemen. Make note, if you're taking notes, some of the social problems that America has faced in the last few years that has bothered the general population or segments of the population or certain races of the population. What are they, Donna?
Police brutality.
Police brutality and the toys the police are getting, those MRAPs that they're getting, the militarization.
Yeah.
That has bothered all of us.
The control and dominate versus protect and serve mentality.
So, ladies and gentlemen, make note. If you're a fan of Donald Trump, try to think about what I'm saying. I know that this is a touchy subject and some people would be offended. I'm probably going to get some emails. What, Nathan, you want us to take Bernie? By the way, because I'm presenting this does not mean that I am saying we need to take Bernie or Rubio or whoever the other guys are. I'm not saying that. I am just talking about this because at this point, it looks like Trump is going to be the front runner and he's going to maintain himself as a front runner. As of this recording, he has taken New Hampshire. So now the momentum is building for Donald Trump. And I think based on what we're seeing, he's going to win. So ladies and gentlemen, we have to know what we're going to be getting and we have to start preparing for it. So that's why I'm talking about this. Right now it's exciting. Yay, Obama's done. Trump's the savior. But a month after Trump is in office, or 6 months or a year after the honeymoon excitement is gone, Donna, there's going to be people who are going to be groaning and complaining and regretful and saying, what in the world? How did we get here? Because I see the next phase of America is going to become darker than it is now.
I see Trump as the kind of guy that's going to, you know, just backhand us one day and we're all going to be shocked and surprised. But you know what? There were signs, folks, to let us know the type of leader. He's not really hiding anything. He's letting us know the type of leader he wants to be.
He talked about databases and surveillance, but listen to what he says in one of his speeches right here. He doesn't just want databases by the NSA. He wants everyone to pitch in and be involved. He wants the police forces of America to get stronger and to be used as information gatherers to profile. Listen to this. Let me just play it. Here we go.
And again, the greatest source for this is our local police. And the really greatest source is all of you, because you have all those eyes. And you see what's happening. People move into a house a block down the road. You know who's going in. You can see. And you report them to the local police. You know, it's too complicated. Call federal government. Who do we call? It's a big bureaucratic mess. Nobody knows what they're doing. Okay? But you people, and me, and everybody, you know when somebody moves to an apartment near you or to a house near you. You're pretty smart, right? We know if there's something going. Report them. Most likely you'll be wrong, and that's okay. But let the local police go in and check out. And you'll get rid of this stuff. That's the best way. Everybody's their own cop in a way. I mean, you got to do it. You got.
Wow. Is it 1933 or 34 or 35?
Report them.
Report them, ladies and gentlemen, to the police. And you might be wrong, but so what? Hitler recruited the entire country to work with the SS, the secret police, to report their neighbors, to tattle on their neighbors, to spy on their neighbors, to be suspicious of their neighbors. So what we ended up with was a country during Hitler's days that was suspicious, where trust was thrown out the window.
Where children reported on parents.
It was horrible. And Trump just told us what he's going to do, Donna. We heard it. Now, if we thought it was bad 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the cops are getting MRAPs. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Republican front runner who is telling us he is going to use the police forces of America to profile and to... It sounds like the SS, Donna.
It sounds a lot like it. And he even said that most likely you're wrong, but go ahead and let the police sort it out. Now tell me, what happens when you think your neighbor is not being a good parent and you report them to child services? Oh, they come in and take the kids away, even if there's nothing going on in that house. Do you think this is going to be any different? You could be setting an innocent family up for years of battle with the police to get their dignity back, to reclaim their name as being a good person. This is not something you just want to do lightly to your neighbors.
It starts out with, well, they look like Muslims, they're dark-skinned, or they look like illegal, they look like Mexicans. So now we have profiling going on.
Neighbor-to-neighbor profiling.
Neighbor-to-neighbor. Hello, Gotham Police Department? My neighbor, I saw them take a gun, a rifle, and a gun case out of their trunk, and they went into their house. My neighbor owns a rifle. Oh, really? Are they using it right now? Are they brandishing it outside, the firearm? Well, no, they just took it in their house. They might have gone hunting. They might have come back from the gun range, but will you send an officer out to check it out? So, ladies and gentlemen, think about this. Doors kicked in, and if cops want to find something, they will. We already know about corrupt police departments that have planted evidence falsely, and I don't want to digress and go into that, but Trump admitted this, ladies and gentlemen, deputizing the entire neighborhood, deputizing your neighbor to spy on you. And deputizing you to spy on your neighbor, creating suspicion. And in order to keep the momentum of this new policy, because that's what it is. It's part of a big plan. If we were to go back to that supposed meeting that took place where the powers that be, the heads, the crafty ones smoking their cigars, you know, the vampires, when they came up with the plan of how do we take America into a new era of surveillance and police state, they have their script, they have their agenda, and one of them is to strengthen the police and recruit citizens. But in order to have the momentum continue, They're going to need, from time to time, events to take place. False flags.
Yes.
Where some neighbors will say, well, I thought they were suspicious looking and I should have. And then there'll be a Dateline or a 60 Minutes program on, you can prevent this from happening in the future. Don't let it happen in your neighborhood. These are the signs. So, ladies and gentlemen, I can see America going into the next phase of oppression. Why is it going to happen? By the way, side note, is it going to happen because America sat on their hands and it happened while they weren't paying attention? Or is it going to happen from bad luck? Is it because the stars lined up wrong? Is it going to happen because the wrong politician won? Or is there a spiritual reason behind it? And I have maintained this for years, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to happen because of what time it is. America is under judgment. The West is under judgment. The world is under judgment. And the judgment of God always has four portions. The four parts, Donna. Famine, pestilence, the release of evil, and the sword, which is vexation, oppression.
And war.
And war, yes. War, defeat, occupation. We can put the police state into the category of the sword. Mm. So since America has not repented, we're going to see the next phase happen. This is coming, ladies and gentlemen. It's not going to be stopped. And how ironic is it that those who should know better, Donna, the evangelicals should know better.
And yet here they are, rah, rah, rah for Trump. And I'm not even saying there's a better candidate. Judgment is coming no matter who comes into office. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. You can't close Pandora's box. It's open. It's out there. You know, the sin is rampant in this country. The lack of fear of the Lord is rampant in this country. As a matter of fact, they actually hate people who fear the Lord and they mock them. Donald Trump is not going to fix it. Ted Cruz, Rubio, none of them. They're not going to fix it.
They're not going to fix it. Now, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, please listen to this program in its entirety because I want this information to be on record. I want it to be known by the smart listeners that we have of Watchman's Cry, so that you can be able to warn your friends. I don't want to see our listeners swallowing the Kool-Aid, Donna, because it is Kool-Aid. Donald Trump is not your friend. Let me just say it. I don't believe for a second that he's our friend. He sounds friendly. He sounds legit. He sounds sincere, but he's not our friend. And how do you convince an individual who would take issue with that? What do you mean, Nathan? He's more red-blooded. He's more faithful. He's more loyal. He's more red, white, and blue than you will ever be. How dare you? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm presenting the facts right here. The evidence speaks for itself. Now, earlier we played a clip about how Donald stated that he doesn't even need Congress. He's going to use executive orders.
Happily, and everybody cheered.
He's going to use them for his own means. But here's another thing that Donald Trump's going to do. Donald Trump is going to love the power, and he is going to want to reissue laws based on his opinion, based on his heart. When you have laws on the books and punishments in the books, Donna, for different crimes, apparently already, the reason I'm bringing this up is because already Trump has made it known that he has different opinions about punishments. And even though the laws are in the books, he doesn't care. He wants to see punishments done according to him.
He is the renegade that he says he is. That's not a good thing.
Edward Snowden, is he a hero among some?
I would say he's a hero. He exposed our government committing crimes against us. That makes him a hero.
He exposed the NSA?
He exposed that they were listening to everything. You know, the conspiracy theorists, the truthers, we've all been saying that for years and years and years. Snowden proved us all right. He is not the enemy.
Okay, so let's play what Donald Trump thinks about Snowden, ladies and gentlemen, and make note of what he believes the remedy for Snowden is. Even though there are three crimes that he committed. He stole government property because he was a contractor. He did take files. He had a classified clearance, a security clearance. He put them on a flash drive, and he did take them. So he was guilty of stealing government property.
Yes.
He was guilty of going against his classified clearance. And then he was guilty of talking to civilians about it. The laws in the books against those crimes are 10 years of imprisonment. Now, I don't know if they overlap and if it's 10 years for one and then 10 in the other, meaning 20. I don't know, but it's 10 years on the books for what Snowden did. Listen to what Donald Trump says his punishment should really be. Listen to this, folks.
Well, first of all, he's a terrible guy. I said it right from the beginning. So many people are trying to defend him. Oh, look at what he's revealed. And isn't it wonderful what he's revealed? And yet people marching in his favor. He's a terrible guy who's really set our country back. China's now looking at us like, you know, we're taking it. We were hitting them hard on what they were doing in terms of what they were taking from us. And now they are really going at it. They're saying we're far worse than they ever were. And he's really hurt us in terms of relationship. And it really shows how weak our country's been and has become when you cannot get this guy back. I mean, you think you tell these countries, hey, folks, we're not doing any deals with you until this guy's on a plane. And that includes Russia. That includes everybody, because we really have become a very different nation than we were.
You know, it's interesting. On the front page of the New York Times this morning, Mr. Trump, legal experts say the administration appeared to flub the case. Why didn't they revoke his passport after the charges were filed? Because they essentially had the chance to freeze him in place, and they didn't do it. They dropped the ball on this.
Well, maybe they thought it wasn't politically correct. You know, spies in the old days used to be executed. This guy is becoming a hero in some circles. Now, I will say, with the passage of time, even people that were sort of liking him and maybe trying to go on his side are maybe dropping out. But, you know, you look at where he goes, and now nobody knows where he is. But we have to get him back, and we have to get him back fast. They're talking about it could take years, it could take months, but maybe years. That would be pathetic.
I grew up in the American military, Mr. Trump, and I totally agree with you. I think anybody that does anything against this country should be taken to task for that.
You know, for him to be ensconced in China, and then all of a sudden he gets out because they say, I'm sorry, you sent in the wrong documents, and we would have done it, but you sent in the wrong documents. And they got a lot of information out of this guy. This guy's a bad guy. And, you know, there is still a thing called execution. You really have to, you have to take a strong hand. You have thousands of people with access to material like this. We're not going to have a country any longer.
But the president's talking about global warming on Tuesday. He's not even addressing this.
We have to do something. You have thousands of Snowdens out there. I would imagine most of them at least have a high school education. But you have thousands of people with this kind of access. And who's going to be the next Snowden?
How do we protect ourselves in the future?
Well, unless the retribution is swift and really strong, you're going to have other people coming out with more information than he's got.
Okay, Donna. Swift. Mm-hmm. Like King would say, swift, off with his head. The tribunal has spoken. Swift, ladies and gentlemen. Forget the process of trial by jury of your peers. It's swift. He should be executed, even though the laws say it's 10 years. Donna, what's wrong with this picture?
It's not even an option. You can't decide that we're just going to kill somebody because we don't like what he did. The only thing Snowden did was prove everybody right who was saying what was going on.
I believe. And Donna, if I'm wrong, I'll repent. If he turns out to be Ronald Reagan, I will repent. I will say, you know what? I got it wrong. I'm sorry, folks. But right now, as I see it, I am looking at Donald Trump as a not just a man, but as a creature, an entity, a living entity that's growing and must grow large when he becomes the president. When he's in the Oval Office, he's going to grow in the same manner that we saw Hitler grow. And we're going to see him act out impulsively. We're going to see that he's not afraid to try things. We're going to see that he's not afraid at all to experiment with the laws that we have in the book, with the Constitution. We're going to watch him as an entity become a shackle around this country. And based on what I see, we're going to watch it happen, because when we look at the history of this individual, he is not empathetic to the little people, to the normal people. Now, he says right now we're gaining the approval and the support of blue-collar workers and Democrats and unions, etc., and that is happening. But ladies and gentlemen, this is an individual who went into cities and other countries. He went into Scotland, and he bulldozed neighborhoods down. He stole land from second, third, fourth generation landowners for his own gain, so that his name could be outside of a building, on the front of a building, so that he could make money. And while he does it, he calls names to those who are against him. He insults them. He calls them stupid, dumb.
He mocks the handicapped.
Oh, yeah. We heard of that one. Yeah.
And he's a chauvinist. If a woman says no to him, he leaves nasty messages on her answering machine for years until she gets a restraining order. You can look that up. That's online. He's not a nice guy. And if you ever say anything against him, he will come after you. So what do you think he's going to do to people in the media, in the alternative media, who speak out against him?
Before Trump entered the game, how many believed the other candidates could rescue America, Donna?
I don't think anyone believed that they could rescue America.
Before Trump, though, how many believed that Sanders or Hillary could rescue America?
I really don't think anybody did.
Evangelicals. How many evangelicals thought that Cruz or Rubio can fix the country?
No, none.
They didn't. But now you have Trump, and you have the evangelicals saying that now there's a chance and he's going to rescue. And by the way, I have to qualify that word rescue, because he says he's going to undo the Obamacare mess. And he's going to replace the Obama mess with something else. He's going to stop the bloodletting. He's going to restore America, bring back all the jobs. He's going to restore the factories. The corporations are thieves, but he has told us he's going to recruit Welch, the guy who started the bloodletting against Main Street America and the workers of America. These vampires, they want an earth plantation. So why and how in the world would they allow this guy to come in and reverse their plan? How is it possible that the average person could think that they're just going to let it slide? If Trump is going to stop the New World Order in its tracks and bring corporatism and fascism to its knees, how can he be allowed to do it?
I don't see how he would be allowed to do it, and I don't see that that is what he wants to do.
I don't think that Trump is a reformer. I don't think he qualifies as a Kennedy. Now, I believe he is on record saying that he wants to be another Reagan. So is it possible he believes what he's saying, but he's still a puppet on a string? Is it possible that they can be controlling him and he doesn't even know he's being controlled? Does he have handlers and he doesn't even know it?
I'm sorry. I can't trust the guy.
I think that we are watching right now, Donna, and ladies and gentlemen, we're watching a production occur before our very eyes. And this production has a cast of characters. It has the players. It has the directors. It has the, you know, the workers behind the scenes.
The man behind the curtain.
The guy that pulls the string on the curtain, the lever holder, and then you have the audience. Of course, the audience is the general population. Mm-hmm. But we're watching this production that also has the sprinkling on it, the dust of bewitching. It's a spiritual thing that's going on, and it's a deception. When we look at the book of Revelation and we see in Thessalonians and in Timothy, it said a great delusion would come in the time of the end, and the beast would use delusion, deception. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what's taking place right now. It's not just witty campaigning. It's not clever campaigning. It's not using clever techniques of politics. Although they are a part of the equation, it's not only that. We have the powder, the smoke of deception in the room. I don't know what it looks like in the invisible realm, but ladies and gentlemen, I fully believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's what's going on. And I noticed something recently with an interview that Donald Trump did with Alex Jones. And I played it for you, Donna, earlier.
Alex Jones is not known for holding back. He tends to rant on when something goes against what he has been teaching or sharing the news on. And I was quite surprised at how reserved he was in the Donald Trump interview.
Okay, now let's talk about that, Donna. He doesn't hold back. You mean his talking points of Prison Planet and InfoWars? He's been at this for 20 years. We saw him in the 90s. Remember that? When he was just a regular, what was it?
The
shared
access.
Cable access in Austin, Texas, where he started. We saw him back then. He would run around town with a bullhorn, and he gained notoriety. And then 9/11 happened, and he did his thing on 9/11.
Yes, very in-depth.
And 9/11 is one of the foundational, still, maybe tenets of, if you could word it that way, it's one of his tenets that make Prison Planet and InfoWars and Alex Jones who he is.
Yes.
He exposed 9/11.
Yes, he did.
Inside job.
Yes.
And when he exposed it, he revealed that it wasn't Osama bin Laden.
Yes, he did.
He has also the name of his website, one of them, Prison Planet.
Yes, what saying is that we are all prisoners on this planet. We are prisoners of the corporations and the government that is controlling us.
The elite. So the earth is a giant plantation, right? And you have the slave owner. And a plantation, if we can look at it as a banana republic, you know, those South American countries where a corporation owns the country and puts the puppet dictator in there,
right,
so that the workers can put bananas in a box and ship them to America. I believe Chiquita and Dole had their origins that way, way back when. And Alex Jones has screamed and ranted about the plantation of Earth. And the plantation happens because the elite, rich men, go into another country and use the military-industrial complex to steal the resources.
And turn the people into slaves.
He talks about the IMF, the World Bank, giving loans and then making the people slaves.
Mm-hmm.
To steal what, Donna? The resources. And what are resources? Whatever's in the ground.
The oil can be minerals.
So Alex Jones has built the reputation and his audience base by exposing this. He has also built his audience base on exposing the billionaires, the elite globalists. They're all billionaires. They go to the Bilderbergs. Now, ladies and gentlemen, make note of the three things I mentioned. We talked about the plantation of Earth. The United States has gone in, or the West. The Crown did this as well before the United States did, and they still do it. They divvied up the map of the world, and they're still robbing resources of other countries. But Alex Jones talked about minerals being stolen, and it's wrong. He has spoken about the elite of the world controlling countries and using the military to steal, and that's wrong. And also 9/11. It wasn't Osama bin Laden.
Right.
Okay.
It was an inside job, according to his video presentation. And it's a very good video presentation, actually.
Okay, so those three things. The other thing to keep on the table is Donald Trump inherited his wealth when his father died.
He did not start with just $50 in the bank. It was not like that for the Donald.
Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, left his son
a tidy sum. Donald Trump's father left him $200 million and over 15,000 New York City apartments with rent to be paid every single month. This man did not start with nothing.
Now, hold on. You mean his father left him a couple of trailer parks, right? And then he collected the rent?
That's what you mean? Funny. Trailer parks. No, New York City apartments. The rent on those things is quite a bit, and it's income. They were probably cash paid for, and he's getting that income every month plus the $200 million.
Did you say 150 or 15? What did you say?
15,000 New York City apartments.
Donald Trump inherited 15,000 rentals.
Yes.
By Fred Trump.
Yes.
So does that qualify as being self-made, Donna?
No. That's like, here you go. Here's your huge inheritance, son. Have a nice life. If he never did anything else in his life, he could have lived for what his father gave him.
He could have survived and had a comfortable life.
Yes.
Okay, so now Donald Trump took that money and, of course, built a real estate empire that was even bigger. But does this qualify as self-made, or does it qualify as having a little boost, a silver spoon, a leg up, whatever you want to call it? Was this what the average person would consider doing it on his own?
No, it's not.
Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to play, not the whole thing because it's pretty long, but I'm going to play sound bites of the interview that Alex Jones conducted with Donald Trump. Now, make note of the introduction that Alex gives to Trump, the words he uses, the resume, the credentials for Donald Trump. Make note of how Alex introduces him. And then I'm going to stop for a moment and I'm going to make a comment. Nathan, why are you against Alex Jones? What's the problem? Why would you do that? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not against anyone. I'm against lies. And if someone stands for the truth, then you're my friend. And I can endorse you and I can hold your hand and stand beside you. Donna, if people are going to bring lies, I'm tired of standing next to them. Are you?
Amen.
This thing is getting so bad. Fire is about to hit the earth. Fire is coming to the earth, ladies and gentlemen. Fire from war. Fire from destruction and death and the judgment of God. God is going to separate those who believe in truth and those who don't. So let me play this intro from Alex Jones. And ladies and gentlemen, make note of the introduction that he says for Donald Trump. Here we go.
Well, we had Matt Drudge about a month ago in studio. Only does an interview every 3-4 years. And I thought that got me excited. But I'm telling you, Donald Trump is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, for the next 30 minutes or so. And obviously, he is a maverick. He's an original. He tells it like it is. Doesn't read off a teleprompter. Neither do I. He's self-made.
Donna, can we back that up a moment and hear what he just said? Let's listen to this again, Donna.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the next 30 minutes or so. And obviously, he is a maverick. He's an original. He tells it like it is. Doesn't read off a teleprompter. Neither do I. He's self-made.
He's self-made.
Doesn't read off a teleprompter. Neither do I. He's self-made.
Does Alex know that Donald Trump is not self-made?
Alex is known for doing in-depth research on things and people. So I am going to assume that he has some idea that Donald Trump started out his life with an inheritance.
Of course he knows. I do not see how Alex doesn't know that. If he does not know that Trump inherited his fortune after all these years, Alex needs a better research team. And he needs to also recant that and apologize and admit that he made a mistake. Because what you just heard there, ladies and gentlemen, he's self-made. No, he's not self-made. Now, if one wants to argue, well, Nathan, he wasn't a billionaire when he started, so he made the billions from the starting point. But that's still a twisting of reality. He is not self-made. He had a leg up.
Yes, he did.
He had the resources. He had the equity to go to banks and say, hey, I'm going to refinance my buildings and this money. I'm going to put it up. And he was able to get partners because of his father's, what his father gave him, to be able to get the loans to buy his first building. So he is
not. You don't get a loan without, like those, without collateral. He had collateral. And being self-made means you start out in this life with no collateral. You move out of your parents' house or your foster home and you make yourself from there with no help from them. That's self-made.
You get off the ship with a quarter in your pocket.
Exactly.
So the conversation begins with 9/11, but then it moves forward. Donald Trump brings up the spying and the surveillance. One of the talking issues that Alex hates, surveillance, and he exposes it. Donald Trump's about to admit or say that we need surveillance, and listen to Alex Jones's response. Let's see, ladies and gentlemen, make note, does he get angry? Does he argue with it? Does he say, hold on, Mr. Trump, actually, no, that we shouldn't have surveillance. Watch this.
Yes, but it happened. Look, we have to deal with reality. And, you know, it all started because I said we need surveillance. We need proper surveillance. We have people that truly are evil, and they're coming from someplace, and you know sort of where they're coming from, at least the vicinity. And I said, we need proper surveillance, whether it's a mosque or any place else. We have to be surveilled and we have to see what's coming at us, because we're not going to have a country anymore. Between the weak borders that we have, the pathetic and weak borders where politicians are afraid to do anything about it, between all of what's happening with radical, you know, you look at what's going on. You have a president that doesn't even want to talk about, you know, the radical Muslim stuff. He doesn't want to mention the word. He doesn't want to say it. But you look at what's happening where we have a president that's over there celebrating global warming and trying to get everybody excited about global warming, like that's our number one problem. He considers that to be our number one problem. And our number one problem is what's going on, where they want to blow up our cities and they want to blow up our country. That's our number one problem.
And then our number two problem is Crippled America, your number one New York Times bestseller. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but let's continue with the number one problem. And I agree with you.
So he said we need to have surveillance. Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen?
At a mosque or any place else.
Okay, so he admitted we need surveillance. Alex Jones didn't stop him. Alex Jones didn't say, excuse me. And this is what demagoguery also does, ladies and gentlemen. Remember we talked about that earlier? It creates fear and it places the villain. And then it gets people emotionally involved, concerned, afraid. He mentioned that we need surveillance. The number one problem are the terrorists. And then he started talking about other things, but he went right through it. So Alex did not stop him on the surveillance.
Something that we know from Alex's past that he is absolutely against.
So what happened here? Why didn't he say anything?
Well, either he's intimidated by Trump, he forgot what he believes, or...
Okay, let's move on.
The America we deserve. And I said in that book that we better be careful with this guy named Osama bin Laden. I mean, I really study this stuff. I really find it very interesting. And even though I'm a businessman, I've always been involved in politics. I said, we better be careful with Osama bin Laden. There's a guy named Osama bin Laden. Nobody really knew who he was, but he was nasty. He was saying really nasty things about our country and what he wants to do to it. And I wrote in the book, 2000, 2 years before the World Trade Center came down, I talked about Osama bin Laden. You better take him out. I said, he's going to crawl under a rock. You better take him out. And now people are seeing that. They're saying, you know, Trump predicted Osama bin Laden, which actually is true. And then 2 years later, a year and a half later, he knocked down the World Trade Center.
You are the leading presidential front runner, with the Republicans gaining a huge lead as you don't back down. But I've got to just back you up again.
I got to back you up again. Trump blamed 9/11 on Osama bin Laden. Alex Jones
says nothing.
And he said, I got to back you again. Now, is Alex Jones thinking, well, if I bring this quote-unquote conspiracy theory, he might cut the mic and leave? Is that what he's thinking? He's thinking, I'll just...
Then why say, I got to back you up? Why say anything like that? Why not just be quiet until he's done? This is not a hard-hitting interview. This is a let me pat you on the back and tell you how great you are interview.
So, let's move on. Now, Donald Trump's going to talk about taking the oil. Alex Jones spent years talking about how we shouldn't have been there. But now Donald Trump is going to say, and you heard him, take the oil, meaning take the resources. Let's listen to what he says.
The more I research what you've actually said and done, it's amazing. You were the only leading American figure who openly said, do not go to war in Iraq. They had almost, what, 90% votes in Congress for it, bipartisan. You said, don't do it. Iran will take over. You said, I mean, look, you can say that today, and everybody can say that, but you said that in 2001, 2002, 2003, when it was very unpopular because you've done your research and had good advisors. How did you know that when almost no one else did?
Well, first of all, I'm the most militaristic person there is. I'm going to build the military. If I win, I'm going to make our military so strong, so powerful that nobody's going to mess with us.
Let me cut in for a moment, Donna. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are two things I want you to make note of here. He's going to talk about the resources, oil. I don't know, what is it, Donna, go in there and plow over everything and just suck it all up?
Well, now that we've dominated and won, let's take everything that they have and leave them with nothing.
Okay, so he's going to mention that, but he kind of threw in something here. I am the most, what was that he said?
Militaristic president ever, or person. Did he say person?
Who else said that when they became chancellor? I'm going to build our military. I'm going to make us so strong, no one will mess with us. Our neighbors will not mess with us. I'm going to make us strong. Hitler said that.
Well, first of all, I'm the most militaristic person there is. I'm the most militaristic person there is. I'm the most militaristic person there is. If I win, I'm going to make our military so strong, so powerful that nobody's going to mess with us. We're going to take care of our vets and all of that. But I have to tell you, you have to know if you're going to go to war, you have to do it properly and you have to know what to do.
Double speak, ladies and gentlemen, or maybe it's just out in the open. If you're going to go to war, you have to do it properly. Did you hear that, Donna?
I heard it.
Let's continue.
But I have to tell you, you have to know if you're going to go to war, you have to do it properly and you have to know what to do. I viewed it as this. Iran and Iraq were the same in terms of strength. And they'd constantly fighting. That's all they do is they fight, right? They go to war all the time and they'd move 10 feet left, 10 feet right, 10 feet left. Then they'd rest. And then they'd start it again 4 years later. This has been going on for,
you know,
forever. Forever. And this is the way it is. I said, if you take out Iran or if you take out Iraq, either one, you're going to destabilize the Middle East. Well, we took out Iraq. And by the way, Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. People don't even know that. So we gave, like, incredible. We took out Iraq. I said, you're going to destabilize. Well, and I said, and you'll know this, and you know this, and I appreciate what you just said, then Iran is going to come in and Iran is going to take over Iraq. And they're just taking it over right now. As we speak, they're taking it over. Iran is running Iraq and very soon will be virtually going to be totally running Iraq, especially after all of, you know, the deal we just made, which is the worst. So I said, keep the oil. And I said, if you're going to leave, you shouldn't have gone in, but they should have left soldiers behind, like 20,000 or a certain number of soldiers. But if you're going to leave, take the oil. And I've said it. Then they left. They didn't take the oil. So ISIS got the oil. Iran is getting the oil. Everybody's getting everything but us. So we lost thousands of soldiers. We spent $2 trillion in Iraq. We have wounded warriors who I love all over the place. And what do we get out of it, Alex? We had nothing. We had nothing.
So, no, the French and the Germans are getting the oil and the Iranians are getting the oil.
And you know who the number one customer for the oil is? Guess what? China.
That's right.
How smart is China? They outsmart us on every level militarily. They outsmart us on trade. Like, we're losing. We have a $450 billion trade deficit with China.
Let me ask you this. You're a top business guy, you know, on your own from nothing. How did China get 97% of rare earth minerals in the world?
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't want this to turn into an argument. Well, Nathan, well, we did go in there and spend a lot of money, so what's wrong with taking the oil? We shouldn't have been there in the first place. Just like Ron Paul said, we should not have done that. We had people die for what? What was the reason? It's to continue the military-industrial complex's desire for the new American century to go in and take over the Middle East, so that we can go in and control the oil and the pipelines and keep Russia from getting to it. That's what it was about. It was the big new Brzezinski's model, his plan, his script, his agenda. So we can't start in the middle and say, well, Nathan, we were there, so shouldn't we have taken? No. We have to look at the big picture from the beginning. We shouldn't have even have gone in there under false pretense. By the way, how many people died by us looking for those canisters of mustard gas that weren't found? 1 million Iraqi civilians. 1 million. And then you have the DU birth defects. Thousands and tens of thousands of children born deformed.
And we had a government in there in Saddam Hussein. And he kept the Sunni and the Shiites from going crazy and butchering each other. Maybe Saddam wanted a little bigger piece of the pie, whatever we were giving him. He wanted more of it. But it was under control.
China, let me ask you this. You're a top business guy, you know, on your own from nothing. How did China get 97% of rare earth minerals in the world? How is the United States or nobody else even trying to get rare earth minerals when it's what goes in the smartphones, the computers? Trillions is made a year. How did we just give them the global market in that? That's crazy.
But watch what Alex says right here, ladies and gentlemen, because he has barked and ranted about how the globalists will go in and rape countries. And he just asked the question, why does China get to have it?
And why can't we have it instead?
Let's move on.
Minerals in the world. How is the United States or nobody else even trying to get rare earth minerals when it's what goes in the smartphones, the computers? Trillions is made a year. How did we just give them the global market in that? That's crazy.
Well, what a lot of people don't know, Afghanistan. Now, Afghanistan's a place we can go in because, you know, you have Pakistan and you have nuclear weapons, a lot of things going on there. But we go into Afghanistan, we're fighting, you know, tremendous mountains and ridges. We're fighting on one side. And you know who's got their excavators on the other side?
China,
taking out all the minerals. You know, Afghanistan, nobody knew this. Afghanistan is rich with minerals, not oil, but minerals.
Lithium, everything.
He said Afghanistan has all these minerals, and why does China get them? So Alex basically endorsed our soldiers are there, and why does China get to have the minerals? So in other words, what he's saying is, since we conquered a nation,
we should have everything.
We should have the spoils. We should strip them. So what are we hearing right here? We're hearing several things. Ladies and gentlemen, please read between the lines and try to listen to what Donald Trump is saying. He said, first of all, he's a very militaristic guy. We're going to have a strong military. And when we go into countries, we're going to strip it, strip mine them for ourselves. And no one else gets it. So we're going to step up the imperialism of America when Donald Trump's in office. And since we have left Iraq for the most part and left Afghanistan for the most part, is he saying that we're going to go back in there, Donna, and finish what we started or what wasn't done?
He seems to be hinting, and he hints towards Iran.
If
we go after Iran, won't Russia back them up?
Of course, yeah, they will.
Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump, in my opinion, based on what I'm listening to from a lot of the sound bites, Donald Trump is a warmonger, and he says that he hasn't been bought. He's for the little guy. He doesn't need to make any money, although we already heard that he wants his name on a wall, and it's really not about making America great. In my opinion, I believe that this is about making Donald Trump great. The legacy that he wants to finish wasn't enough to have his name on casinos and outside of hotels and buildings. The legacy is about the next phase of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, the conqueror. The conqueror, Donald Trump. The great one, Donald Trump. The military genius, Donald Trump. That's what I see coming. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of things on this program. Donna, I think war's coming. I really do. When he becomes the president,
which he most likely will.
Ladies and gentlemen, start praying now and start thinking now about how to navigate this thing. Because if he does what it looks like, he's going to want to go into Syria. He's going to want to defeat certain Middle Eastern countries. He's a businessman. He wants to put the pipeline in there. What better guy to finish the work of the pipelines than an actual businessman? He knows how to do it. He already said, I'll get Exxon and oil companies to go in there with the pipelines. It was all about the pipelines way back when from George Bush. Ladies and gentlemen, it was the pipelines. Donald Trump just said, get the oil and the pipelines. So,
and troops to guard it. Donald Trump is telling us he's going to be a fascist president. He's going to mix business with government and use it to control everything.
This is incredible, Donna. I see this playing out, ladies and gentlemen. And again, if he doesn't win, then I will have to go back and say, wow, okay, so it's going to happen through Rubio or Cruz. By the way, side note, Donna, let's talk about them for a moment. What is Marco Rubio's logo? What is his motto?
A new American century.
That's sounds a little bit familiar. To what?
It's very familiar because there is a document called the PNAC, which is the Project for a New American Century.
The PNAC document, and we know what it is, the neocons?
The neocons. That was kind of what got us to where we are today, what took us into Iraq.
So he would work too, wouldn't he, as a candidate? New American Century, ladies and gentlemen, that document written in the late 90s by Paul Wolfowitz and all the neocons and Dick Cheney, and who laid out the script for what needs to occur. We need a new Pearl Harbor event so that America could invest and transform its military and bring in the cyber warfare, and also bring in bio weapons or genetic specific bio weapons. Do you remember that, Donna? That was
I
in
do.
There.
Yes. So Rubio doesn't sound too innocent either.
Maybe they're saying whichever one wins. And then Ted Cruz?
Well, besides the fact that Ted Cruz himself is an insider, his wife, Heidi Cruz, is also an insider. She works for Goldman Sachs. She has had a seat on the CFR. She's in the in crowd.
She's an insider. So is that a coincidence her husband's running for a president?
No, it's not a coincidence. And there's not one candidate who actually stands for the things that, say, the Tea Party did or the Truthers stand for. They're just all insiders.
Ben
they
Carson?
Are all...
Donna, Ben Carson. He's a nice guy. I think he has narcolepsy. He falls asleep every now and then, but he's a nice guy.
I really don't know that much about Ben Carson other than he is a doctor. He is pro-vaccine. He is very quiet.
He had 5 malpractice suits against him in his career.
Yeah.
Got sued 5 times for I don't know what, but I don't know. He left a sponge inside someone or something. I don't know.
I don't know. He's not, but he doesn't... Maybe Ben Carson is a good guy, but he doesn't stand a chance with his lack of go-getting.
You mean since he was a liberal just a few years ago? And
which is shocking for somebody who says that they're a Seventh-day Adventist, but yes, for all those reasons.
I'm not saying there's a better choice. Rand Paul, of course, he dropped out.
He would have been my pick, but more so because I liked his father.
And he does have some issues, but he probably would have been the best out of all of them, but he dropped out.
Yeah.
Oh, what about Bubba?
Jeb is just not making any...
He came in 4th place in New Hampshire. So the tally so far, Donna?
Is Trump with 17 delegates, and Cruz, he has 10. 7 delegates for Rubio and 4 for Kasich. And Bush coming in with 3, and then Carson also has 3, and Fiorina has 1.
The main guys are going to be... Well, I thought it was only going to be 3 after Iowa, Donna. I really did. I thought it was just going to be Trump, Cruz, and Rubio, but...
It will be shortly.
It still is, yeah. Trump 17, Cruz 10, Rubio 7. So Kasich got 4. Is that an anomaly for one state? I don't know, because he came in 2nd here. But Trump, wow. The one thing I notice about this is the outcome matched his polling numbers. Now, and when we were watching the Iowa caucus, the outcome did not match the polling numbers, and I was bothered about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I was bothered because I think Trump did get ripped off from Iowa, and that bothered me because I want to see honesty occur in this election. I don't want it to be all rigged, and I know that it is rigged. I know that they will try some rigging because Iowa did, or Cruz did some things that were below the belt, but I want the real numbers to show, because in the aftermath of the winner taking place, whether it's Trump or Cruz or Rubio, in the aftermath, then... when God looks down from heaven, it will be what the people chose. Then they can't cry and say, oh, we were given someone that we didn't want. Trump's going to bring a lot of pain to America. I really believe that. And it has to be the result of the people's choice. And how interesting is it that everyone's climbing on this thing? I'm not trying to throw rocks and throw stones.
It's not that the people are wrong for wanting a change, but the change that they want, this isn't how we're going to get it. I mean, the Bible's very clear. If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, it's in the Bible. It tells us exactly what we need to do to have a different world than the one we have now. But the evil one is out there. He's deceiving people, and they're not doing what they should be doing, and they're looking for a savior and a king is not going to save us. There's only one king that can save us, and his name is Jesus, not Donald Trump.
I want to talk about one more thing. It looks like we're going to have to do another program, Donna.
Yeah.
Will you come back and help again?
Sure, I will come back and help.
By the way, let us know what you think about this team effort, because if you don't like it, I'll fire her on the spot, and I'll never have her again, because I don't want her to bug your ears. Right, Donna?
That's right.
But anyway, I want to touch on one more topic. And this next one, Donna, I hope I can communicate this in a manner that does justice to it. Is there a good way to present what I'm going to present? Well, let me just say it this way. There's some weirdness with Donald Trump that bypasses what I believe are the boundaries of a father-daughter relationship. I don't understand it. And I want to just talk about it for a moment because, well, hold on, Nathan, hold on. What does it have to do with him being the president? Why would you even bring that up? Well, because I think that it does it matter, Donna?
Well, I think it speaks to character and boundaries. Even if it's just boundaries in humor, there are boundaries to humor.
Yeah, there are boundaries. So, Nathan, what are you talking about? It has to do with a joke that Donald Trump has toyed with. He's been doing it now for 10 years, is it? Since 07?
06.
Where he jokes around about dating Ivanka, his daughter. And it's just weird. It's creepy. And
as a woman, I find it offensive.
Well, I have a daughter. I wouldn't say some of these things.
And if I ever heard my friend's father say such thing about their daughters, I would not want anything to do with that man.
What am I talking about? Donald Trump jokes around about not just dating, about actually having sex with his daughter. He jokes about it.
Yes, he jokes about her body.
Now, I'm going to play a clip when he was on The View, March 6, 2006. So this is almost 10 years ago. And I'm going to play this so that this is on record. Because if his boundaries are this mixed up and messed up, what does that say about other boundaries that he should have regarding morality or honesty or integrity or diplomacy? Because if the boundary is mixed between your own daughter, what would be the boundary with another country? Or what would be the boundary with our nation's daughters? You see, it plays in. Integrity matters. Yeah. So when he was on The View, it started out by them asking him if it would be all right with him if his daughter Ivanka posed for Playboy. And first of all, Donna, if someone asked me that,
yes,
there's
really only one.
I would probably be repenting after. Yeah. But he was asked on TV by the women of The View, and he didn't do what a father should do to deny it or get angry by it or be offended by it. And let me just play it. Watch this. We'll let him reveal his true heart. Here we go.
All right, I'm afraid to ask this question, but what would you do? Playboy put Ivanka on the cover of the magazine, and she had not.
This is going to be an interesting answer.
he doesn't even want you to have a drink. I know it. So
it would be really disappointing. Not really. But it would depend on what was inside the magazine.
She posed, it would be fine. But if they put her picture.
Let's stop for a moment. Donna, it would be really disappointing. And then
he said, not really.
It would be really disappointing. Not really.
Like, not really.
Maybe
it'd be disappointing and then maybe not. It depends what's in it.
And what we know what's in it.
They said if she posed, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on.
The magazine.
She posed, it would be fine. But if they put her picture on...
Yeah, but it depends on what goes inside the magazine.
Well, see, that's her gripe. That's right. This girl's gripe. People assume there'll be nude photos.
Right, you do assume that.
Misleading.
Okay,
if there weren't, you wouldn't have an issue with it then. They were using her to...
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure.
Okay, the first time, I would be disappointed, not really. And now it's, I don't think she would do that, although...
She has a very nice figure.
Now, what dad would say that about his daughter?
After being asked about Playboy.
Alrighty, two strikes, Donna. Strike one.
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure. I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her. You know?
Stop it. Oh, it's so weird. Stop it.
You know what? You are sick.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
You're known for saying outrageous things, Mr. Trump.
Who are you, Woody Allen?
I have said if she wasn't my daughter,
I would be dating her.
And then he said, is that terrible? Is that terrible? Strike two.
And the answer is yes, that is terrible. Because she is your daughter. Even Joy Behr finds it repulsive and disgusting and compares him to Woody Allen.
And Joy Behr, is that one of the View girls?
She is one of the extremely liberal people on The View.
And she said that's sick.
Yes, it disgusted even her.
So,
it's not funny.
Weird?
It's creepy. I find it very creepy.
He was then on another program, and Donna, when did that one happen?
2015.
So this was more recent. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen.
And then, Dad, you answer also. Okay, Ivanka, what's the favorite thing you have in common with your father?
Either real estate or golf.
Donald, with your daughter?
Well, I was going to say sex, but I can't relate that.
Oh, that was Hulk Hogan creepy.
So I'll just go into a very simple and boring answer. How about real estate?
I have sex in common with her?
I don't even know what that means.
And the host said that was creepy. Folks, did you hear that? This is recent.
Ivanka, what's the favorite thing you have in common with your father?
Either real estate or golf.
Donald, with your daughter?
Well, I was going to say sex, but I can't relate that.
Oh, that was Hulk Hogan creepy.
So.
That was, yeah. And then he was on the Howard Stern program.
That was in 2003.
And he was talking about Ivanka back then.
Yes.
And he said, you know who's one of the great beauties of the world, according to everybody? And I helped create her. Ivanka, my daughter, Ivanka. She's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body. Do you have to take a shower, Donna?
Yeah, I'm really grossed out right now.
But ladies and gentlemen, this is possibly the future president of the United States. You know, for the evangelicals to run to his corner and say that he's the guy... There was a group of preachers that prayed for him, and they anointed him and asked God to bless him. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Donald Trump during the prayer, he is fidgeting like they're throwing hot water on him or something, but he was not comfortable with them praying for him. And there's something else that I have not been able to confirm, but it's a little bit weird to me. Sean Hannity interviewed Jerry Falwell Jr., the late Jerry Falwell. His father passed on, and his son took over the family ministry, I guess you could say. And he was telling Sean Hannity that there's a side of Donald Trump that the public doesn't know about. Mm-hmm. And then he cited a good deed that Donald Trump did. And I haven't been able to either confirm this. Based on the searching I have done, trying to see if it was true, so far, I'm finding that this is an urban legend that has been attributed to a lot of rich people, even Henry Ford. This legend goes back 100 years.
And Elvis.
And Elvis, supposedly. But let me just play this little segment, because this segment went viral and many evangelicals heard it. And that was one of the things that got them to vote for Donald Trump. We can't decide if it's true or not without having proof, but I don't think it's true.
Well, the fact that it's a tale that's been around for over 100 years. If it's been around since Henry Ford, then how could it all of a sudden be attributed to Trump?
Okay, so let me just play it.
All right, that was Donald Trump speaking to students at Liberty University in Lynchburg earlier today. Now Trump vowed to set aside political correctness and protect Christianity around the globe. Here with reaction, the president of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr.
He got his limousine broke down one time. A couple stopped and helped him. He paid off their mortgage a few days later. These are all things that you never hear about Donald Trump, because he comes across as sort of a tough businessman. And it just reminded me so much of my father.
Now, Donna, his limo broke down and a guy stopped to help them. And because the guy stopped to help him, he paid off the guy's mortgage. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said.
So I searched for that, and when he was on The Apprentice, Trump said that someone asked him if that story was true, and he said yes, on The Apprentice. So that's like 10 years ago. But I looked and I looked to try to find out if that story was true, and I have not been able to find the person. There's several versions of this story. Mm-hmm. He broke down on the New Jersey Turnpike, and then another one he broke down in Detroit, and there's another one. Actually, there's a third one. He broke down on a freeway in Florida.
Sometimes he was with Ravana, and sometimes he was with Marla.
Right. And it was a flat sometimes, and then...
Sometimes they just didn't know what it was.
But in all the versions of the story, the cell phone in the limo doesn't work.
Yeah, the phone in the limo just, for some reason, doesn't work.
The richest guy, the limo driver, has his phone, and Donald Trump has his phone, and none of them work.
None of them work.
The car phone doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
So in the version that's the most popular, though, they have a flat, and yeah. So a good Samaritan stops to help them change the flat, and then after the good Samaritan is finished putting the new tire on and he's going to leave, the window goes down, and Donald sticks his head out and says, "How can I help you?" And the guy says, "Send my wife flowers."
So here's my address.
And Donald says, "Sure." And then a few weeks go by, and then there's a knock on the door with the delivery guy of flowers with a card that says, "By the way, I paid off your mortgage." And that's how the story goes. So first of all,
every time you hear it, no matter whether Ford did it or Elvis did it or Donald Trump, that's the way the story goes.
So it happened to Ford also. He was broke down. And
yeah, they didn't have cell phones back then. So, of course, he paid off the guy's mortgage.
In that version.
Yes.
We don't know if it's true either. Okay, and then Elvis did it also. And then other rich people have
yes.
Stars, singers. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is an urban legend. You can look it up. And the thing that I have to ask about this is, okay, if it was a flat tire and a good Samaritan stopped and helped them change the flat, that means the flat was in the trunk, because a good Samaritan's not going to have the same tire that the limo needs. So the limo had a tire in the trunk, but the limo driver needed help opening the trunk and taking the tire out. Is that what I understand?
Maybe the limo driver had never changed a tire in his life.
So he didn't know how to change a flat. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and AAA was unavailable.
Oh, okay. So here's what is absurd about it, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, whenever you have a flat tire and you jack up the car, people get out of the car so it won't rock. Am I right, Donna?
Yes, so it won't move.
Whenever we have a flat, I have the family get out.
So we don't make the car fall off the jack.
Right. But in this rendition, Marla and Trump, or Ivana and Donald Trump, mm-hmm. they stay in the car because they're rich and they don't get out of the car.
Yeah.
So the way that this story can work is the window comes down and there's Donald thanking them. But they left out the problem of them staying in the car when you jack it up to yes. change the tire. Okay, so that's a problem. And then the other one is a limo driver hired by Donald Trump should be schooled on how to change a flat tire, you would think.
It shouldn't have been any problem.
So that's a hole in the story. That's a problem.
Maybe he got fired later.
I don't believe this story. It sounds absurd. And if you look it up, I found one story right here. It's articles.mccall.com. And you can look it up, ladies and gentlemen. It says Trump didn't pay mortgage of Samaritan by Bill White, The Morning Call, October 25th, 1999. And it says one thing that impressed me big time about Trump happened several years back when his limo broke down on the Atlantic City Expressway and was disabled for some time until a good Samaritan stopped and helped Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump offered compensation to the man who refused, but several weeks later, when the good Samaritan went to pay his home mortgage, he found his home paid off completely. Is this man, Trump, a class act or what? The alert reader pointed out that this alleged incident is an urban legend, as documented on one of the web's reference pages for this kind of thing. It addresses the story at length, concluding that it's a retelling of an old tale. Urban legend meister Jan Brunvand, Brunvand, devoted a chapter. So Jan Brunvand wrote a book on urban legends, Donna? Mm-hmm. In one of his books, Curses Broiled Again. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's in the book Curses Broiled Again, and this good deed has been attributed to, now watch this, look at this, Perry Como, Donna,
mm-hmm.
Louis Armstrong, Leon Spinks the boxer, Evel Knievel, Nat King Cole are among the celebrities mentioned. The Trump story is just a variation on that theme of the grateful celebrity whose car broke down. One of these tales is retold at length. It involved a black woman whose car supposedly broke down along an Alabama highway in the 60s during a rainstorm. A white man who stepped to help noticed she was in a hurry, but she wrote down his address before he put her in a cab. 7 days later, a giant combination console, color TV, and stereo was delivered to his home. The attached note thanked him, signed Mrs. Nat King Cole. It's a nice story, but it's a false one, the site explains. So, if this urban legend has been around a while, Donna,
mm-hmm.
what are the odds that it actually came true for Donald Trump?
Not likely.
But Donald Trump stated on The Apprentice that it...
And who has come forward to say that Donald Trump paid off my house? Not one person.
So you don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it.
So if it didn't happen, that means he was lying on The Apprentice.
I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump has lied.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't believe it. It's too convenient. And getting back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of this program, the demagoguery, how it's all an act. It's
to get him where he wants to go.
Yes, but now we have Jerry Falwell Jr. speaking on the Hannity show. Mm-hmm. After that was on the air, I saw people on Facebook spreading it, that Donald Trump's a good man because he paid off someone's house. So on Facebook now, you have Christians believing the story. Well, Nathan, are you sure it's not true? Okay, for 100% certainty, no. I just have my doubts.
Yeah, I have my doubts.
Because a man that wants to hint or flirt with his daughter and make jokes about having sex with his own daughter, I think he has the capacity.
Well, we know he can lie. He cheated on Ivana.
And lied about it.
And lied about it.
For how long? That's a good point. So, well, I think we're out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, I presented a lot of information here, and we're going to have to finish in another episode. But I'm also going to talk about what our challenge is. How do we navigate this? If my concerns are valid, that Donald Trump's going to take us to the next chapter of the judgment of America, and if they're valid that war is coming, included with Trump, we're also going to see an economic crisis arrive. Donna, we're watching the beginnings of that. The stock market's struggling. The fractures are in the pavement.
Oil prices are dropping.
Oh, man. Thanks for reminding me. On the next program, we're going to talk about the oil markets. Ladies and gentlemen, the prophetic vision I had about Standard Oil crashing, we're going to dissect different parts of that dream because there's like 4 to 5 parts. And I'm also going to share about events that are... I believe that civil war is coming eventually to the United States, and Texas is going to play a role. By the way, folks, I have a message that the Lord gave me with a lot of information. It's kind of a mini Bible study on deception. So in our next program, we're going to talk about deception, and we're also going to talk about how do we follow the leading of the Holy Spirit to navigate around deception and to be able to overcome deception. Donna, over the last few years of this ministry, you have answered thousands of emails.
Yes, and, thousands.
And you have run the forum. You have dealt with people. And when you deal with a lot of people, you start honing the senses of
discernment.
Discernment.
Yes.
It takes practice, though.
And it takes falling down and getting back up. And
it takes getting hit a few times, sucker punched.
Yeah.
Surprised.
Studying the word.
Studying the word. But I'm talking about in the heat of battle, you have to actually experience failures to see where deception came in and where discernment might have been there, right, but you didn't pick up on it, and then you end up paying the price or falling or being a victim of, yes, deception or whatever, betrayal. So we're going to talk about that on the next program. And one of the reasons that I have Donna here is because I want to have her present from her point of view, a female lady, woman's point of view of how the Spirit works in you, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
The intuition, the prompting of the Holy Spirit, the check in your spirit, the gut feeling, the, you know, there's different ways to describe it. But sometimes when you just know something's not right, to weigh, that comes with practice, right?
Yes, it does.
When a person first starts out, they don't know all the signs. But with practice, we learn the signs. And we're going to talk about that on the next program, ladies and gentlemen. So it's going to be about learning discernment. So look forward to that. But we're out of time now. This program's pretty long. Please share it with your friends and your family members. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your letters of support and your emails of support. And without you, we couldn't do this. You've given us some great encouragement. Please continue praying for Donna and for my family, for our children, for me, for provision and for protection, because we really, really need that. And also, folks, if you appreciate what we're doing here, the Watchman's Cry, we appreciate your support, and we thank you for the continual support. Our address is Watchman's Cry, P.O. Box 157, Priest River, Idaho, 83856. Or you can go to our website at watchmanscry.com and contact us there. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe, stay vigilant, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Thank you.